Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
What is love? What is the truth about love? Well, the truth about love, again, Jesus is the embodiment of that because Jesus said the greatest demonstration of love is to lay down one's life for another, to lay down one's life for his friends. But Jesus, he didn't only lay down his life for his friends, he laid down his life for his enemies. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues our Christmas series. Join us as Pastor Brian concludes his teaching on John chapter 1, verse 14, in a message titled, "The Word Became Flesh." Now here's Pastor Brian.
The disciples were fearful that they were going to perish in the storm, and Jesus stands and he rebukes the wind and the waves. And you remember, they all look at one another, and I think with some trepidation, and they said, "Who is this guy? Who could this be? He just commanded the wind to cease, and the wind obeyed him. He just spoke to the sea, and the sea became calm. We beheld his glory." Yes, John was there. He was beholding his glory. And then, of course, there was the feeding of those large groups of people, 5,000 on one occasion, 4,000 on another occasion. And again, we see the miraculous power. We see the creative power. We see that he's multiplying. He's creating from these things, from this meager amount that couldn't, you know, fill 10 people. He's filling the 5,000, not to mention the other thousands that would have been there who are not mentioned, because it just specifically says 5,000 men, not including women and children. And not only does he feed them, but then remember, they collected 12 baskets full of fragments after that. He manifested his glory. We beheld his glory. And then there are those accounts through the Gospels of the raising of the dead. The raising of the dead. The daughter of Jairus. The widow of Nain. Remember, Jesus and his disciples, they come upon this village of Nain. And there's a funeral procession. And here's a woman. She's a widow herself. She has no other children, and her only son has died, and they're going out to place him in the grave. And Jesus comes upon this procession. He stops. He sees the whole situation. He walks over, and he takes the young man, and he raises him up and restores him to his mother. Oh, you know, and as you're reading through the Gospels, and the writers are chronicling these things, and then they say that the people said, we have never seen anything like this. We've never seen anything like this. And people would say, God has visited his people. Yes, God had visited his people. That's what was happening. But then when it comes to the resurrection, remember, you have the most descriptive account of a resurrection is the resurrection of Lazarus. And you remember Jesus there. He comes to the village of Bethany, and Lazarus has died, and Martha and Mary, his sisters, they come, and they, "Oh, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Jesus said, you know, he's going to rise again. "Oh, I know, Lord, he's going to rise in the last day. We understand that at the resurrection." And Jesus looks at Martha and says, "Martha, no, you don't get it. I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection." And then he proceeds to raise Lazarus from the dead. And then the next thing you know, as you carry on into the 12th chapter, I love this because it says, it goes on to talk about Jesus sitting at a meal, and he's gathered together with a group, and it says, and at the table with him also was Lazarus, who was dead. Can you imagine that? Yeah, we had dinner last night. Well, who was there? Oh, you know, there's a few people, you know, came over, and then, oh, you know, what's his name, who was dead? Well, he was there too. That's how it was. Yeah, Lazarus, remember the guy that was dead? They put him in a tomb. He was there for 4 days. Yeah, he was at dinner. He had dinner with us last night. That's what happened. And they beheld his glory. These were the manifestations of his glory. And then, of course, the transfiguration. And this is one that the apostles themselves would later point back to. Peter, in writing his epistle, he points back. He says, we were with him on the holy mountain. We saw. We heard the voice from heaven. And there he was transfigured. And there the glory of his inner person burst through the flesh. And they saw Jesus momentarily glorified. And remember, that was Moses and Elijah appeared with him. And it was there that Peter said, oh, Lord, it's good for us to be here. Let us build three tabernacles. And the voice speaks from the Father. This is my beloved Son. Hear him, the transfiguration. But then there's another manifestation of his glory. Remember in the Garden of Gethsemane. And they come to arrest him there. And they come and they say, we're seeking Jesus of Nazareth, this band of soldiers. And Jesus says, not, as your translation might read, Jesus says, not, I am he. Jesus says, I am. That's all he said, I am. And what did they do? They went backward and they fell to the ground. He manifested his glory. That was a manifestation of his glory. John was there. He watched this band of soldiers that were coming to arrest Jesus, and he saw that they were absolutely powerless in his presence when he just simply declared, I am. And the glory, the weight of all of that crushed these men. But from the garden, Jesus went to that ultimate demonstration of glory that nobody recognized at the time, and that was the cross. You see, the cross was the great manifestation of God's glory, but at the time, nobody knew it. They thought that it was the sign of defeat. Everything that they had hoped for, everything that they had longed for, everything that they had thought that was going to be happening as a result of Jesus coming to them, in their minds, all of those hopes were dashed. He was crucified. What they didn't realize is that was the greatest demonstration of glory, because that's where he was taking upon himself the sins of the world. That's where he was securing our salvation. That's where he was crushing the head of the serpent. It was on the cross that he was spoiling, as we read in Colossians, the principalities and the powers, and making a public spectacle of his victory over them. The cross was the central place where his glory was manifested. But then, of course, came the resurrection, his own resurrection. He rose from the dead. And then they understood. Then they realized that the cross was not a defeat. No, the cross was the greatest demonstration of his glory. And then, finally, we come to the ascension. So Jesus comes into the world. He chooses to come. The Word is made flesh. He comes through this process that we all go through. He experiences the entire thing, all the way through to death. But then he bursts the chains of death. He rises from the dead, never to die again. And as he returns to the Father, now he returns in the only way he could return. He ascends into heaven. He ascends into heaven. And here's the amazing thing. Today, right now, this minute, there is a man. There is a human being who is sitting on the throne of heaven. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And you know when the Word became flesh? He has remained flesh, and he will remain flesh forever. That's something that we often overlook. This wasn't a temporary situation that Jesus put himself into. Certain aspects of it were temporary, yes. But the permanent element that we sometimes forget is that Jesus is now forever a man. That is what was involved in the Word becoming flesh, the incarnation. And we beheld his glory as of the only Son of the Father. And then, John says, full of grace and truth. Full of grace. Jesus came into this world full of grace. And when you read the accounts in the gospel, this is what you see about Jesus. He's full of grace. What are we talking about when we're talking about grace? We're talking about God's favor toward those who do not deserve it. And Jesus is full of that. He's just pouring out grace wherever he goes. Some people weren't all that happy about it. The ones who didn't think they needed any grace, they were upset at all the grace that he was dispensing on people. But they were just deceived. They needed that grace as bad, or maybe even more than others. But he came full of grace. In Luke's gospel, remember when Luke is giving us the account of the birth of Christ, and he talks about the angelic host that appeared to the shepherds in the field. And remember, the angelic host, they were praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." That's what it says, right? On earth peace, goodwill toward men. They're making a proclamation to the world. The birth of this child. They're announcing the birth of Jesus, and they're essentially saying what this means is peace on earth, goodwill toward men. This is God demonstrating his goodwill toward men. This is God pouring out his grace. You know, it's interesting that some Bible commentators have taken that phrase and they've changed it. And they've said, you know, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. I don't think anybody's consciously thinking that sounds too gracious, but apparently somebody thought that did seem the case. So they've altered the wording to read this way, peace on earth toward men of goodwill. So what they've done in the altering of the wording is they've actually put a stipulation. God's peace is for those who are men, women, people of goodwill. So suddenly you're limited now. You see, in some people's minds, this idea of being full of grace is too much. That's too much grace. Now, the Pharisees felt that way. Jesus came with this message of grace, and what was he doing? He was touching everybody. He was blessing everybody. He was ministering to all kinds of people. People that would never again even give him the time of day. He was blessing them, healing them, providing for them, taking care of them. He was doing all of those things. And even the legitimate ones that he was ministering to, there were certain at the time who just thought, no, this is wrong. He shouldn't be around those people. And they would come. Remember, they came to the disciples of Jesus. They say, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? What's the matter with him? What they were doing is complaining about grace. He's got too much grace. You see, they thought that the peace was only for those who were of goodwill. But no, the peace is God's goodwill toward men. We are not men of goodwill. We are ill-willed. We are self-willed. That's all of us. There are no good-willed people. The proper reading is peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Because that's consistent with we beheld his glory as of the only Son of God, full of grace and truth. From Jesus, the fullness of God's grace toward man flows. Jesus is the dispenser of God's grace. The fullness of his grace flows to us from Christ. But John says also that he is full of truth. He is full of grace and truth. Jesus is full of truth, and you know, we need the truth. Remember, Jesus himself said, the truth will set you free. Truth is essential. You can't live without truth. If you just decided today that, you know, look, I'm just going to live as a full-blown relativist. There's nothing that's true. Everything's relative, and I'm just going to, you know, people think that way. Theoretically, nobody lives that way, because the fact of the matter is you can't live that way. But let's just think about it for a moment. So let's just say, you know, truth, and, you know, people today, of course, are fond of saying there's no absolute truth. And they reject that idea. We can't live. You couldn't live the rest of the afternoon without truth. And I'll prove it. So nothing's true. That's the new position. So we leave here today and we pull out on the road. Oh, what is this red light, green light stuff? You know, come on. They say you're supposed to stop at a red light. You go at a green light. That's not true. Nothing true. Just some dumb system somebody made up. I don't have to follow those rules. And you can go live that way. And later in the week, we will have a memorial service for you. Because you won't live through the afternoon. You can't live without truth. And that's just a small, in some ways, insignificant illustration in the bigger picture of things. Jesus is the truth. We need truth. And so he comes full of grace, but full of truth as well. The truth about what? The truth, number one, about God. Jesus comes, he's full of truth about God. What is God like? What does he think? How does he feel? What would he say under these circumstances? What would he do if this happened? Jesus, he is the one who revealed that to us. He's full of truth, and he demonstrates the truth of who God is to us. But not only the truth of who God is, Jesus is also the truth about man. What is man? Where did we come from? What are we intended to be? What is the purpose of our existence? Is there a purpose to our existence? Jesus comes and he is full of truth. He shows us the truth about what man is to be. Man is to be first and foremost dependent on God, living in harmony with God, living for the glory of God. Jesus demonstrates all of that for us. He shows in his own life what man was intended to be. He is the truth about man. He's the truth about life. What is life all about? This is a philosophical question that people have been pondering for thousands of years, and they're still wondering about it today. What is life all about? Well, life is all about God. Life is all about our Creator. Life is all about knowing him and glorifying him, walking with him, living in communion with him. And then the rest of life is to flow from that. Again, Jesus, he's the truth about life. He shows us that. But then he's also the truth about love. What is love? Well, we have so many different definitions of love today. We have so many ways that we use that word today, right? And in some ways, it's like, wow, it's kind of lost its significance in some ways. Because if you use the same word to describe your feelings toward your wife as your feelings toward your favorite ice cream, you know that this can be a little bit confusing. There's a lot of confusion. What is love? What is the truth about love? Well, the truth about love, again, Jesus is the embodiment of that, because Jesus said, the greatest demonstration of love is to lay down one's life for another, to lay down one's life for his friends. But Jesus, he didn't only lay down his life for his friends, he laid down his life for his enemies. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. God demonstrated his love for us, and while we were yet sinners, while we were enemies, Christ died for us. He's the truth about love. This is what love really is. Love is that which will lay down its life for another, considering another more valuable, another more precious than oneself. That's the truth about love. And then finally, Jesus is the truth about time and eternity. Listen, this space we're in that we call time. Jesus is the truth about time. Remember, he is the Alpha and Omega. He's the beginning and the end. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. All things were made by him. What is included in those all things that were made? Everything. Guess what was included in that? Time was included. Time is part of creation. And before time began, Christ was there. And when time ends, he will be there as well. And everything in between The truth about history, we will all find out one day, all of the things that we thought were the important things were really not the important things. There was one primary thing that history was all about, and that is about him. He is the truth about time and eternity as well. Because time will end, but he never ends. And when time ends, Christ will still be there. Just as he was there before time began, he will be there when time is over. He's eternal. And the prophet Micah told us that. Micah chapter 5, verse 2, "You, Bethlehem, though you are little among the thousands of villages in Judah, though you are little, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one who is to be the ruler in Israel and over the nations, whose going forth is from old, even from eternity." Christ, the eternal one, stepped out of eternity into time. He stepped back out of time. And when time ends, he will be there still. He's the truth about time and eternity. And so he's full of grace and truth. And John says, we beheld his glory, the word that became flesh. And all of this, of course, was to do one thing. All of this was to reconcile the world to God, bring the world back to God. And the world begins, first and foremost in God's mind, with us, the people, created in his image. That's what this is all about. And this is what Christmas is all about. Christmas is about the reconciling of the world to God. God and sinners reconciled. That's what it's about. Christmas time is about the gift of God. We give gifts to one another. And why do we do that? Well, we do it because God gave a gift. We place gifts under a tree. God displayed his gift on a tree called a cross. The Bible even uses that terminology. Christ hung on a tree. And so today, as we close, here's my question. Have you beheld his glory? Have you received his grace? Have you beheld his glory? These things that we're talking about today, have you beheld his glory, but have you received his grace? That's the most important thing. But really, unless you behold his glory, you kind of think, well, you know, why do I need his grace? But when we see who he is, that glory, when it breaks through, like when he said to those men in the garden who came to arrest him, "We were come for Jesus of Nazareth." "I am." You see that glory, and all of a sudden it dawns on you. You realize this Jesus, this person that people have been talking about and celebrating his life for thousands of years, and you know, some people are for him, most people are against him. You realize suddenly that this is the most significant person that ever lived, because this is God in the flesh. You realize that, and oh man, I need to receive his grace. If you've not received his grace today, it's there for you. Whoever you are, wherever you've been, whatever you've done, his grace, he's full of grace. And you just come to him, it's a gift. And what do you do with a gift? He's extending the gift. He just says, come and get it. You take it. It's yours. So you come to him, you receive that gift by receiving him. And if you haven't done that, I know many of you have, but if you haven't done that, I pray that you would do that today.
For the month of December, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled When God Became One of Us. It's a 40-day devotional through the Gospel of John by Pastor Brian. This book, When God Became One of Us by Pastor Brian Broderson, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. So we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. And don't forget to visit backtobasicsradio.com, where you can find more resources or sign up for Pastor Brian's free daily email devotional. Our website again is backtobasicsradio.com. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our Christmas series right here on Back to Basics. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.